Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another fantastic year here at Healing Ground Movement. We're going to take a little break for the holidays, but we'll be back with fresh new episodes starting January 3rd. We'll see you then. In the meantime, please enjoy this past episode where I sit in the interviewee hot seat and share my thoughts on disease care versus healthcare through the lens of my own healing journey. Hope you have a wonderful holiday and enjoy some time with your family and friends, and we'll see you next year. Welcome to the Healing Ground Movement, a podcast dedicated to revolutionizing how we think about our bodies and our health. I'm your host, Dr. Carly Hudson, DC, and I have lived my life in pursuit of holistic healing and care that goes beyond symptom management. If you've been listening and like what you're hearing, head over to your favorite platform and leave us a review so we can reach more people with our important message. Enjoy today's episode.
Welcome back to yet another episode of the Healing Ground Movement. My name is not Dr. Carly. My name is Stephen Andrews. I produce the Healing Ground Movement for Dr. Carly, and today we're actually going to be talking to her. So this is the start of season two. She's got a lot of things that she wants to move towards, a lot of impact that she's trying to have, and she has this podcast, and she helps give other people a voice, but today we're giving her her own voice. It's a gift, really. You're welcome.
Well, watch out, because you know I don't shut up.
So we're gonna lend her own platform to her to kind of really dive in and explain what it is that she likes about salutogenesis, about healthcare versus disease care, how she is trying to make that impact. Likes was the wrong word. I don't know why I used that. I am just a geek who happens to be too smart for his own good. I can keep up with her a little bit. I'm a formerly licensed EMT out of Texas, and we can dive in and have a little bit of fun with that.
All right.
So my first question for you is not your normal first question. My first question for you is, what would you say is the biggest hurdle health-wise that you have had to overcome?
Oh, wow. I don't know. They all just blur together.
You've had a few.
I've had a few. I think that the biggest hurdle was really actually getting the diagnosis, making sense of all of my symptoms and issues in a way that I wasn't stabbing in the dark with them.
Okay.
You know, when I was an infant, and you know, some of these stories will be redundant at this point, but when I was an infant and I had bacterial meningitis, you know, that was a easily categorized issue. You know, initially they thought it was chronic ear infections, and my mom was really aggressive about this is something's wrong with my daughter, and I got the spinal tap, and I got the diagnosis that ultimately saved my life. But that was an understood constellation of symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Check them off, and here's what we're doing. For the next 29 years, everything that I went through with balance and anxiety and depression and hearing loss and speech issues, memory issues, coordination, all of that was fine. And it was just below normal. Well, the hearing loss was significant, but everything else was just below normal. And I compensated well. And there was nothing that anybody else was going to do to touch it, except that it kept getting worse.
Yeah.
Until ultimately when I was in grad school and I was trying to pass an adjusting class, I lost control of my left side of my body in a condition called apraxia.
Okay.
Where, you know, I still had muscular movement. It wasn't paralyzed, but it wouldn't listen to the commands coming from my brain.
Okay.
You know, my brain said twitch fast and my left arm went, but do I need to?
Did your left arm just start randomly hitting people or acting like a mind of its own?
I mean, no, but maybe I should have tried that excuse on a couple of people.
There's an episode of House where that happens.
It just kind of keeps going.
Mm-hmm.
No, it kept going into a little bit. It's called an upper motor neuron lesion, where you go into a flexor position, which is sort of like you see in cerebral palsy or stroke victims, where the damage is in the brain, where, and you can see it kind of still does that every once in a while, where it does more of this and wouldn't go into an extension quickly, just wouldn't behave. And my left leg lagged a little bit more.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that became an absolute deal breaker for me becoming a chiropractor.
Yep.
The thing that I had now been working on for, I think, 2 years at that point, really aggressively. And I needed a diagnosis. I needed someone to finally look at everything that was wrong with me and say it all made sense.
Gotcha.
And I ended up going to this doctor in Portland, Oregon, Dr. Glenn Zielinski. And for the first time, he did tests that nobody else had done. He looked at my issues functionally. He didn't write them off as, oh, but look how good you're doing. And we all misplace our words and have memory. He saw memory issues. He saw it for what it was. And he gave me a diagnosis, and he gave me the words apraxia, ataxia, cerebral lesions, all of these things. And I just started sobbing in his office because I was finally understood, and I was finally seen, and I finally had a way out.
Okay.
And that was probably the biggest hurdle. And I hear that all the time from patients where, you know, I end up being their last resort, or I refer them to their last resort, where no one has heard it. The biggest hurdle is being seen for what is functionally wrong.
Okay.
In a way that matters.
Okay, I like that. So what you're saying is you had these issues. Mm-hmm. You'd been trying to find the answer, but nobody was looking at the full picture.
Mm-hmm.
We have specialists, which are wonderful people,
mm-hmm.
but they were focusing in on, okay, well, this one or two symptoms really are the root of it, and then everything else is just ancillary and happening just because of this. But if we solve this, as opposed to looking at the whole picture, the whole box,
mm-hmm.
And saying, okay, well, what does that whole box say?
Yeah, because none of my symptoms, I went into a really deep clinical depression for a handful of years, and that was serious enough to gain treatment from a specialist, and I saw a psychologist. But none of my symptoms ever got bad enough on their own
mm-hmm.
to need a specialist.
Gotcha.
They were all fine enough, but they all added up to a really negative impact on my quality of life.
Yeah.
I would fatigue and confused and disoriented in a way that I didn't understand and couldn't convey. Particularly because when I get fatigued and disoriented, my verbal skills really drop. I lose articles. I lose the ability to put together a coherent sentence. So I couldn't explain myself on top of it.
Some people call that being drunk.
Yeah. And basically, that's what my symptoms are. It was just basically like I was drunk all the time. So I would just, instead of going out with a friend, even doing something as simple as going to their house to watch a movie, I'm not even talking about going out and partying, I would choose to not do that because I knew that if I did a whole day of school, drove someplace I wasn't familiar, watched TV, had to process sounds, had to process movements, which was very hard for me, which I now have the language for now. I didn't then. I just knew I'd be tired. I knew I would not be safe to drive home.
Gotcha.
I would be too drunk.
Yeah, you'd be too tired. Your decision limit would have been reached. Your brain is just, you're just not working. It's like you have a bad day and you're just like, what is going on? You keep dropping things like that sort of.
Well, and it's the kind of thing where it happened once. And when my mother hears this, I know it will horrify her, but I was leaving a friend's house in high school. So, you know, I was maybe 17, 18 years old. I'd been to her house before. I'd been driving for a while now. And I needed to take a left-hand turn to get out of the, you know, her development. And I couldn't process that there was a median. And so I ended up going the wrong way down the street. Now, this was 11 o'clock at night. There were no cars.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. Everything was safe and fine. But it was a moment of never again.
Yeah.
I got lucky. There wasn't a police officer to pull me over where I had to explain what on earth was just happening. I wasn't drunk. And that there, I didn't hurt anybody or myself.
Yeah.
And so I just stopped going out late. I stopped doing these things and my world got smaller.
Smaller. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, that's a real heavy one. I had another question come to mind while you were talking, but I've lost that. So we're going to move on to how does your experience and the functionality aspect of looking at what's wrong. Mm-hmm. How does that play into your theme for the new year and probably for the rest of your life mm-hmm. that you've probably actually just added words to? So it's been your theme, but yeah. now you know the word for it. Salutogenesis.
Yeah, you're right. It has been my theme. It's been my battle cry my whole life, and I think will be forever, because I think it's a really important way of looking at health and way of looking at your body, your life in general, because, of course, this isn't just about physical, you know, physiological, biological health. This is mental health, emotional health, spiritual health, family health, systems health. You can apply it to everything. But it's the difference between pathogenesis and salutogenesis. Now, pathogenesis is something that is really culturally acceptable, really a part of what we do here.
Mm-hmm. Keep going.
is the idea that there is something wrong and we need to remove it. We need to cut it out, take out the cancer, poison the virus, remove the bad seed. You know, that's not a hard one to grasp.
So pathogenesis, we're talking about chemo. Mm-hmm. We're talking about, I mean, maybe a minor form of it would be anti-inflammatories.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But that sort of thing where we're adding something to try and defeat something else.
Exactly. It's a real okay. battle mindset. My first interaction with medicine, with my meningitis, that was pathogenic. Pathogenic medicine saved my life.
Yeah.
There was a virus that was invading my body. It was not supposed to be there, so we killed it.
Yeah.
What pathogenic medicine doesn't do is what happens if the system isn't working? What happens if what you're doing and who you are is not strong enough or effective enough, and it needs to heal, and it needs to become better along a spectrum? And this can be even things like, it doesn't mean that I have to heal and become a stronger person overall, but it can even be coming to terms with something you can't remove. So there's an example we talk about in this group I'm part of, Fully Human at Work, where there's a woman who had terminal cancer and was never able to remove the terminal cancer, but she came to a point of living a healthy life within the reality of her illness. And so she healed without removing the disease. And so when I look at salutogenesis and what my life was and is, living with this odd assortment of symptoms, is I share all my stories not hoping for pity. I don't want anyone to look at, you know, the elementary, middle school version of me and go, oh, what a rough go of it, because I was happy and I was okay within what my reality is. Yeah. I found healing and coping and support that was outside of a need to remove or fix something.
Okay.
And I can continue to heal and improve these processes without thinking there was something that had to be cut out or changed.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Sort of. Mm-hmm. So I want to go back. So you mentioned the woman with terminal cancer. Mm-hmm. You said that she healed. Mm-hmm. Now, by healed, when a layman's mm-hmm. term, healed, gets thrown out like that, do you mean that she survived the cancer and no. it went away? Mm-hmm. Or do you mean that she understood the reality, but that reality was not going to define how she acted?
In a sense, yeah. No, she never healed from the cancer. It was terminal. She did pass. But she found health and happiness within the life in front of her.
Yeah. So she knew she had a limited amount of time mm-hmm. left. She did what she could, as opposed to trying to go into the fight with chemo or mm-hmm. whatever it might be and being miserable for 6 months before she passed.
Yeah. And it's looking at that. It's a sense of almost a conversation of quality of life.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a big piece that is missing. And I think a big light has been shined on that over this last year. You know, and of course, we have acute instances where we need to go into immediate life-saving actions when we can. But when you look at what that trade-off is for quality of life and the ability to live fully and heal within the reality around you, it's not that one is bad and the other is good. It's that they are two parts of a conversation, and we have really only been talking about pathogenesis as a cultural given. And this idea that the idea of quality of life and life worth living and what we can do to support ourselves and make ourselves stronger within the reality of what is, that's not a common conversation, mostly because we have to spend so much time describing what it is to then even have that conversation.
So then I have a question. So to that end, so at Genesis, we're talking about the functionality mm-hmm. and all that sort of fun stuff. The system itself is broken. Mm-hmm. So if dialing back from the philosophical standpoint of finding happiness within the reality mm-hmm. and finding health within the reality, a more concrete version, maybe, you tell me if I'm right or wrong, mm-hmm. could be in your skeletal system. Your elbow is dislocated. There is no medicine that you can take to fix that. Mm-hmm. You have to physically move it back into place. Does that hit the thread of soul-to-genesis at all?
A little bit. And so it would be, you know, we have to move it back into place. But then along with that healing process, there's a process that you move it back into place, but there is perhaps damaged muscle tissue and damaged tendons. And so it's back into place, but it still hurts or it's still achy. Or you still don't have full range of motion. You're right. There is no pathology that now needs to be removed, but it does need to heal and mm-hmm. you need to strengthen it. And you need to work with it and get better over time rather than a pathogenic approach to that would be to do a steroid shot and just not have that pain or inflammation there. Okay. But you still have to heal.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Would you say that salutogenesis, I'm going to throw a term out, mm-hmm. In a sense, or it could be argued for, that it is psychosomatic to understand where you are and take control of that, and that mm-hmm. has effects on the rest of your body?
I mean, it does.
In a positive way.
In a positive way. It's not psychosomatic within itself, because there's a lot of things that I've done in a healing process that are not.
Yeah.
But it cannot be ignored that the idea of being a victim to a disease and take cancer again. The research shows that there are better outcomes if a patient feels hopeful or in control of their disease,
yeah,
that there is something they can do with it. So that could be a part of our care. How a patient feels about their possibility of survival is a significant impact on how they do.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
If you have hope, mm-hmm. I know when I wake up mm-hmm. and I have days where I feel hopeful and then I go to the gym, and I bust out a good workout, mm-hmm. and I feel even more hopeful when I'm thinking about positive things. I go home, because I work from home most of the time, and I crack out a whole bunch more work.
Yeah.
I'm in a better mood, and the evening comes around, and I go hang out with friends, and I'm mm-hmm. in a better mood the whole time. The day is better. So I'm just trying to take that thread mm-hmm. and apply it to overall health and
yeah.
It makes logical sense to me. Mm-hmm. Psychosomatic might be too heavy of a term to use, but
it's not incorrect, but it's a bit of a blanket term for it.
Yeah.
But having that impact, there's definitely, you know, I had that experience myself that I made do with a lot of my symptoms, and I knew, but as I figured out what was within my control and what I could change myself, it opened up a whole world of improvement for me. Mm-hmm. But it was also very noticeable to me that if I felt a victim to everything that was going on in my brain and things I didn't know at the time, but now have words for the damage in the coordination systems of my brain and in the motor systems of my brain. I've been doing yoga since I was 10 years old, and that has been a huge part of my recovery because it just kept challenging me to find coordination.
Yeah.
But at 10 years old, I couldn't do a long lunge without holding onto a chair or I would fall over.
Gotcha.
But if I was feeling, and I could only stand on one leg without falling over for the first time when I turned 29, yeah. when I did this treatment with Dr. Zielinski. But when I was in a unhopeful, when I was in a this is awful, why me? Because I went there. Of course I went there. I would have dreams where I would fall asleep crying, thinking about what it must be like to be a coordinated person that didn't have to quit gymnastics and jazz dance and wasn't always put on the worst team or could hear.
To be a normal person.
To be normal. And I would go do yoga and I would fall on my face. Or I would be grateful and so pleased that a disease that I had a 5% chance of surviving didn't kill me. And look how strong I am that I made it this far and I can live within this life. And would you know what? My balance was better. And there I could maybe even get away without using the chair for a little bit.
There you go.
It makes such a difference of how we frame this. I'm a victim to it and no one can tell me what's wrong and they can't give me the medication to fix it. Or I'm figuring it out and it's a part of my life and I am going to do the best of it with best with it that I can.
Okay. So then moving on that thread, I've got another topic that I want to move into, mm-hmm. but I've got another question for this. Mm-hmm. So myself, I am with zero credentials. I'm intuitive to understand how the human brain works and the communication that can happen between people to truly understand somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I have friends who are psychologists and who are often impressed by my ability to keep up with that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest fears that my psychologist friends have is giving a diagnosis to somebody suffering from a mental condition
mm-hmm.
that is not chemical in nature. If it's not chemical in nature, then they can't start testing with different drugs to correct that balance.
Mm-hmm.
And then they even go down, once that starts, then they go down the path of, okay, well, now the liver has adjusted, and now we have to change the cocktail of drugs that we're giving to get mm-hmm. that balance right, and they play that game. But they fear giving those diagnoses because either they haven't figured out how to communicate a way to be hopeful to their patient,
mm-hmm.
or their patient who's already suffering from a ghost in their head, essentially, is mm-hmm. the way I like to put it. It terrifies me to think about it. That if they give the diagnosis, the patient goes, well, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
That's who I am. And that's not true. I know that.
But it's the attachment.
But it's the attachment. They've mm-hmm. got something that they can hold on to, and they say, okay, well, this is that, so nobody can bother me about it anymore. Mm-hmm. Or something like that.
Well, and so to kind of assume the question coming there, it's...
Yeah, sorry.
It's that kind of fear, which I definitely understand within the healthcare system. I mean, within the medical system, patient satisfaction with a doctor's visit is often dependent upon whether or not they get a prescription.
Mm-hmm.
And doctors will give a prescription just to have done it. I mean, not that they're doing any malpractice, but it has that has become the way that we do medical practice.
It's become a transactional business.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so without that, what value am I giving you? But what can happen in that situation, and I definitely agree with giving a diagnosis in a way that is, this is you and now, you know, hang on to that. That's how you'll be labeling yourself for the rest of your life. Versus giving a condition of, we understand what's happening and here's how we're going to change it. That requires a lot of vulnerability on both the practitioner and the patient.
Mm-hmm.
Because both of them have to step into a place that says, this is going to be a lot of work. Are you ready?
Yeah.
And I'm going to hold you accountable for doing the work because ultimately, and I, you know, I say this as a licensed doctor, I don't fix anybody. I can take away some pain, I can align some joints, but they'll be right back in here with the same problem next week unless they change something themselves. They have to heal and own that responsibility, which means I also have to own the responsibility of not thinking it's my job, of not thinking I need to save them.
True, but to be fair, mm-hmm. as a chiropractic patient of yours,
mm-hmm.
what you do is you teach generally...
Mm-hmm.
A bone being out of place can come down to uneven muscle mm-hmm. use, uneven strength in muscles, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
So you give the exercises to strengthen and balance and figure that out to keep, I don't know, my collarbone from coming out, which yeah. I popped back into place earlier today.
Good job.
but So there's a duality there.
There is. So I have to educate you. Mm-hmm. I have to give you the tools. I mean, otherwise, why are you coming into my office if I'm not doing anything? But by giving you the education and the tools to understand what's going on with you, that's not that you have, you know, what you feel like it's your collarbone, but what you feel like is a bum shoulder. And now you have a bum shoulder and you can never go rock climbing or do what you love again.
Yeah.
But that you have a situation. Here are the tools to go fix it. Go. Come back next week and we'll take a look at how you've done. We'll check your work and we'll move you along.
Yeah.
Well, that would be the same argument that I would give to, you know, saying working within psychology. And I did this. I was in deep clinical depression for 2 years. And I went and saw a therapist and, you know, I never treated it with medication. Not to say there's anything wrong with using medication.
Absolutely not.
You know, but that was just, I never did.
Yeah.
Because the person I chose to go see looked at the behavioral and the coping mechanisms and gave me the tools to do better. Now, he could have given me the tools. I could have left them on the shelf and let them get dusty, and I'd still be here clinically depressed and probably not doing a podcast.
Yeah.
But I made them work.
That reaches thousands of people every month.
Yes, it does. You can heal. If we can change the way we talk about health, talk about disease versus health. And so it's not, I now have a hook to hang my pain on and I'm keeping that hook.
Yeah.
But I can say, this is where I'm starting my journey. I am starting my journey from the place of clinical depression or apraxia or leaky gut or anxiety or any other diagnosis I've been given over the course of my life, asthma. That one did get bad enough to need to be treated by a specialist. Any of these things, and say, this is where I'm starting, but it is not where I'm going to stay.
Yeah.
And we turn our relationship with our practitioners into a partnership of journeying away from, not managing symptoms within.
Gotcha. I like that. All right. Now we're moving on to the big topic of the day, healthcare versus disease care.
See how I kind of set that up there?
You did. You did a very good job. It's almost like you've been doing this for a little while.
I can't just shut up.
So let me try and set the stage for this.
Okay.
So healthcare versus disease care. In a previous episode, I can't remember who you were talking to, but you were chatting with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
In a previous episode, we talked about having a test done,
mm-hmm.
a blood test. And you get XYZ results from said blood test.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you fall into the normal boundaries. However, depending on what state you're in,
mm-hmm.
Depending on what country you're in, those boundaries might be skewed based on the normal range of the population and not what is necessarily healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, if you're in the United States and you're male, and your body fat is at 20% or 22%
mm-hmm.
or 26%, you might fall into normal. However, mm-hmm. you are outside of the bounds of what a normal, healthy operating body is.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not a shameful thing or anything like that. That's just looking at the pure science of it.
Mm-hmm.
So when we move into what we're going to call today disease care,
mm-hmm.
Which is hospitals and doctors and going in, getting a pill, booking on out without changing any sort of the lifestyle thing that led you to develop the thing that you went to go get a pill for.
Mm-hmm.
Can you further elaborate on why disease care is a term now and what that means to you?
Definitely. And so the interview you're talking about, it was with Dr. Miranda, not doctor, I'm sorry, she's a nutritionist, with Miranda Myers, who is a nutritionist who works within the functional bounds. And we were talking about how when we do these blood tests, beyond just being normal, and we talk about things, and I think we should really, particularly after this year, when there's a virus that targets inflammation, has a tropism for inflammation, what we call normal healthy. Chronic headaches are considered normal. Regular backaches are considered normal because, again, much like myself, they don't reach this category of end-stage disease and pain. So that's kind of what we were talking about is in that realm of normaling. What that does is disease care waits for you to break. it waits for your blood counts and your numbers to get so bad that now you are highly symptomatic and needing that specialist, which is essentially what any MD that I might have gone to over the course of my life would have been waiting for me to do. Or when my arm stopped working, that was a point where I had reached disease. But in the interim of all of that, we all know when there is something that is just not quite right or just not quite good enough within our personal health, and wanting to manage that and wanting to stay away from a diagnosis of diabetes or cardiovascular disease or, God forbid, heart attack or stroke. So disease care is managing a disease and managing your symptoms of a disease, because metformin doesn't change anything about how you process your blood sugar. It changes the symptoms and how that blood sugar impacts your body. Gotcha. It does the work for you, but it doesn't heal your pancreas. It doesn't make anything better. And, you know, when we get to end stage disease care and organs have completely crapped out, you're
in a different story.
In a different story. You're past the point of no return.
Yeah.
But do we have to wait to get there? So when you take a prescriptive medication to handle these symptoms, we're really just managing your symptoms until you get bad enough to need emergency intervention and die. And depending on what it is, you know, you may or may not get there with any speed. Versus healthcare. That's the thing that truly manages keeping you healthy and improving so you're stronger. So that if you have a chronic headache, well, let's not wait until that chronic headache proves itself to be chronic inflammation that turned into plaque blocking and arterial issues,
yeah,
or blood sugar mismanagement or dehydration that is draining and killing your kidneys. Let's not wait for an organ to break and say, aha, there that was is. Your problem all along. Can we look at your whole body, your whole self, and say, you shouldn't be having a headache. How can I help you with that? How can we improve your health? Is it stress and anxiety? Let's get you moving. Let's get you out getting some fresh air. Are you dehydrated all the time? Most people are. Drink some water. Food, diet, lifestyle. And if we do blood draws, we can look at things within a functional level and say, you know, your numbers aren't bad enough to prescribe you anything. You know, no doctor would say you're broken, but I see enough discrepancy here to say perhaps you are nutrient deficient and that would help your headache.
You need to change up, maybe eat some more peppers and onions.
Yeah, you have a lifestyle issue. And what we've talked about with a variety of our guests here on the podcast, which my bias is now clearly showing why I ask them here, is that so much of our end-stage disease started off as lifestyle medicine. And if we had focused on healthcare, keeping you healthy and pulling you away from, yes, it was a chronic headache, but now it's a chronic migraine, oh, too bad,
yeah,
and pull you to, I don't have headaches, that we could keep so many people out of that emergency care, out of, you know, the ER. And where I draw my line to is that modern medicine, for what it is, I mean, it's phenomenal to have all of these interventions. It's phenomenal to have pharmaceuticals that can come in and help systems that are broken succeed again. I mean, that's just amazing what we can do. But should we just be waiting to apply this Band-Aid? Shouldn't the goal be to have as few people on these medications as possible and save that for, you know, the really, really tough cases that we just couldn't figure out in time? Shouldn't the goal be to keep people healthy enough to never need to go to the ER, except for during, you know, freak accidents?
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, that was wonderful from the heart, from the gut.
Thank you.
So what we're saying is disease care is the management of symptoms,
mm-hmm,
until there is something truly, truly, truly wrong and you can't get up anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas opposed to what we believe to be the true definition of healthcare is I'm on the decline. I'm having a bad day. I've had 7 bad days in a row. Mm-hmm. Maybe I've had 30 bad days in a row. What is going on? What can I address now before I end up in the hospital, needing an emergency intervention, whether that be a surgery, whether that be whatever it might be?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the clear distinction line that you're drawing?
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you can do so much more in that. But it does put you in what is kind of that awkward position of holding you as the patient, you as the person living in your body, responsible for your health care. Because there isn't going to be a silver bullet for that. And it's just like you're talking about your friends in psychology and kind of that, I don't know what to do in that place, is that you have to take responsibility. No one else is going to eat better for you. No one else is going to drink the water for you. No one else is going to take, well, maybe if you live with someone, they'll take your phone away so that you should go to bed at 9 o'clock, not 2 in the morning. But all of these things, the onus is on you.
I feel personally attacked by the cell phone comment. I'm
yeah,
just saying.
I think that most of our listeners probably feel personally attacked by that comment. But there is no one to take responsibility for it but you. And I say this not to try and sound holier than thou, but I recognize that it's hard. I know it's hard. I will cry now. I have been doing this my whole life. No one was going to practice balancing for me my whole life. No one was going to put me first so that I could rest my brain and function at the bare minimum I needed to, even at the loss of things I wanted to do. No one was going to heal me for me. And now, as I am dealing with fallout from having COVID last year and long hauler, because my whole system was, you know, set up like a house of cards to just break when inflammation breathed on it too hard. It's like, ha! No one is going to heal my leaky gut for me and change my diet and take my supplements and drink my water. I have to do all those things. I had to do the mindfulness exercises to pull myself out of clinical depression. I had to do it all. And it was hard. And it is so worth it to go from being drunk all the time, deaf and drunk all the time, to the balance I can do. And the first time I got on an aerial hoop and could hold myself up and spin the way I would dream of crying myself to sleep as a child, and to not have a hearing loss anymore. I am no longer hearing impaired. I'm learning how to process the sounds. This is a whole new game for my brain, but I can hear them. What health is when you're not settling for good enough and not coping with regular headaches and fatigue and brain fog and not having the energy to be present in your life in a way that is as vibrant as it could be. Why would you settle for less because it's less work? And I know we can go down a huge rabbit hole about systems and support and access. And I am so lucky to have been in a family where I had access to adjunct medicine. I put my entire career path so that I would be in front of doctors that could help me in a functional way. I am unique and am very privileged in that place. But we spend so much time focusing on end-stage pathology and ignoring what the simple medicine of access to healthy food, not having 7-Eleven be your closest grocery store, access to clean water, access to an income that lets you have any downtime and quiet to rest, to move your body, to handle all of these measures of health that is health care. You know, we break the backs of most of our population, and certainly by race and socioeconomic status disproportionately, so that we have to wait for disease end stage care because there is just not the resources to slow down and take care of lifestyle in the meantime.
Yeah. And so being that, and we're getting pretty close to needing to wrap up here, I would say generally a final question for a podcast is what is something that you can do? I think that you have made it very clear that you understand that the system as it is set up is designed to create a dependency on disease care, on pathogenesis.
Mm-hmm.
And I will ask you that question. However, I believe that your place and the place you are trying to take is not the one of the person who is able to say, this is what you should go do, because you see the systemic problems and you are trying to lead a movement to change the systemic problems.
I want us to ask for more. I want us to know, and I bring on all these specialists onto the podcast because it is true that no matter where you are in life, there are things that are at your disposal. Taking 5 minutes to meditate and breathe deeply does make a big impact. These things are written off as, oh, frivolous self-help, take a bubble bath kind of things, but they have measurable, distinct, important impressions on our body. And so anyone can do at least a little something. But full access and full support, because while I say I've done all these things and they're hard, I have also not done them alone. My parents have supported me. My husband supports me. My closest friends understand and support me in my healing process. And when I tank and need to take time, I've got people to bolster me. This is not, you know, you do this alone because you can't. And so, yeah, the system is not set up to support this and encourage this. And it's my just deepest hope and desire is that if we can understand and appreciate what it means to not settle for less and what we're really asking for and what the real impact is on our world, on our economy, on our workforce, on everything. Everything comes back to the health and well-being of the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And we are doing a disservice in this country by not putting that first.
Yeah. I can't think of anything better to end on, but it has been an absolute pleasure talking with you. I appreciate it. And I will do my signature sign off for my own stuff because I feel that it matters. Take care of yourself, take care of each other, and we will see you in the next one.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed what you heard and got a little something out of it. Now remember, the information expressed in these interviews is for informational and not diagnostic or treatment purposes. However, I hope you find that having the right information and resources can go a long way to helping you on your healthcare journey. Ask the right questions and seek out professional help.